provide to our entire community. Without further ado, I'm going to put you on the spotlight video so that you'll be everyone will be able to see you. And I know that we sent out Makoros in advance for people to be able to see. I'm happy to share them in the as a file in the chat in just a moment.
Okay, it's really such a kavod and an honor to be here tonight. And I want to thank Rabbi Bernstein, who really has so many great ideas to really spread Torah on campus and is really, I think, really changed the environment in Stern in a beautiful way with Torah and the environment and along with Penina. So I want to give a big yesher koach to both of them for always spearheading such great programs. I also want to say a few words about Rabbi Norman Lamb and Mindy Lamb. It's really an honor for me to speak at this inaugural shiur that's also in their honor, because Rabbi Lamb was a central figure in our Torah Mada world as a rabbi of the Jewish Center, as the president and chancellor of Yeshiva University, and also someone who articulated our hashkafa in a very meaningful way for many individuals. He also appointed Rav Rosenzweig as a Rosh Yeshiva in NYU, and we were really close family friends for many years. Also, we were friends with Mrs. Mindy Lamb, and she was the head of the women's organization for Yeshiva University, and we worked very closely on many projects and especially many shiurim throughout all the years. And they will really be missed. And tehei nishmatam tzrura b'tzor b'tzror ha'chayim. Okay, our question for this evening is, there are great men and women who are leaders in Am Yisrael. And especially with Shevet Yehuda, we have great leaders. And the question is, who made them into the leaders that they are? And what's fascinating for us, as we see many times with the Avot and Imahot, the Imahot had such a big influence, we see that especially with Shevet Yehuda. And I'd like to propose this idea. With Yehuda, we're going to see there's one woman who plays a major role, and that is Tamar. With Boaz, we're going to see that there are two women, mostly Rut, but also Naomi, who really finally push Boaz to be the great leader that he is. And with David, we have three women who play a very important role. And those three women are Michal, Avigail, and Batsheva. And my question for tonight is, so who is the real heroine in David's life? Was it Michal? Was it Avigail? Or was it Batsheva? And each one played a different role, and that's what we're going to try to figure out tonight. Can you decide one is the biggest heroine, or each one played their special role, or one really was instrumental in really forming David in the way he really became a great leader in Am Yisrael? So that is what our goal is for this evening. If you look at the Makorot, you have a file of Makorot that was shared with you. If you look at the Makorot, we're going to start with Yehuda and Tamar. And if you look at Yehuda and Tamar, we see we're in source number one in Breshit Perek Lamed Chet. After Mechirat Yosef, Yehuda leaves from the brothers. Vayered Yehuda me'etechav. And he marries a Batish Kanani. And that also was questioning, a big question for us. Yehuda, especially with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the idea of marrying a family member was very important and very central. And yet what we see here is that Yehuda leaves from the family unit and he marries a Bat Ish Kanani. And then he marries his two sons to Tamar. First, he marries Er and then Onan because Er sinned. And then he doesn't want to marry off Tamar to his third son. And what's so interesting here in this situation is that we see the two sons die. Yehuda does not want to give Tamar to Shelah. She goes back to her father's house. And Tamar is left in a lurch because she really has Zika connection to Shelah. She can't marry anyone else. And we know that she does this drastic act. She sits at the crossroads. Tamar is dressed and covers her face. Her identity is not known to Yehuda, and Yehuda goes into her tent, Bepetach Einayim, and she requests three items before he leaves. When she is expecting, word gets out to Yehuda, and he says, Hotziyua v'tisaref. She should be burned. That should be her punishment. And when she's on trial, Tamar does not defend herself with words, but she shows the three Huda gave her when they had that meeting, B'Petach Einayim. And these three items really identify Yehuda. And Yehuda could have looked at them and said, you stole them, you received them a different way. But Yehuda understands that he really should have been responsible for Tamar, but he doesn't fulfill his responsibility. And what Tamar is saying to him with these three items is that you have to take responsibility. When Yehuda's sons die, we don't find him speaking to his children, giving them some kind of advice or trying to get them b'derech hatovah. We only see him acting, but not really thinking about the future, not really thinking of what happened within the family. But Tamar makes him think about his future. And as a result, when Tamar gives birth, these children are Yehuda's, and there are two sons, twins. And Peretz really pushes his way forward and becomes the Bechor. And what this symbolizes for us is this idea of recognition, self-realization. What Yehuda says, tzadka mimeni, ki al ken lo netati al sheila b'ni. She's more righteous than I, because I didn't give her to Sheila, which means I didn't give her to Sheila my responsibility as a father to my son and as a father-in-law to Tamar. And yet I let them down, sold, or I helped sell Yosef, and I wasn't thinking of the consequences to my father or to anyone in the family. Know that you learn from this responsibility, and then he's the one who takes responsibility for Binyamin going down to Mitzrayim, giving the speech to Yosef when they meet before Yosef even knows that he is, that before he thinks they know, right? Before Yehuda does not know that he is Yosef. And Yehuda gives this impassioned speech, and Yehuda is the one who's responsible further. And Yaakov gives him melucha, leadership, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, in the end in Sefer Breshit. So we see that Tamar was instrumental in making sure that Yehuda is in his center of balance with this idea of leadership, the idea of responsibility. And she plays a very important role. That is the turning point in Yehuda's life, the idea of taking responsibility for your actions. We find the same thing in Megillat Rut. In Megillat Rut, Elimelech originally does not want to take for Am Yisrael. There's a famine in the land. Boom, he leaves. So you could say Avram also left. But Avram leaves only when the famine is Ra'av Ba'aretz. But Elimelech leaves right away. The Midrash says, and the Psukim really uphold that, that when there was a famine, he didn't want everyone to come and ask him to support them, so he left. It's a time of the Shoftim. There were no central kings. And this is instrumental for us to understand. Elimelech, his name means leadership. This was a potential for Yehuda, finally, at the end of the time of the Shoftim, to have Malchut. And yet Elimelech doesn't live up to it. And Naomi goes along. She leaves. Even her two sons marry Moaviot. She doesn't say anything. Only when the two sons pass away, she wants to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Ki pakad Hashem et amo latet lahem lachem. Because Hashem remembered Am Yisrael to give them bread. Now again, hashgacha pratit, and the fact that Hashem runs the world, is the most important idea in our lives. But we see that Naomi was relying only on hashgachat Hashem, which means man does not have to act, not have doesn't have to make decisions, doesn't affect history. Everything is in the hand of Hashem. So my actions don't make a difference, because whatever I do, Hashem will do something differently. But the idea in all of Tanakh is this idea of us being junior partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are the ones who have to do our hishtadlut, because Hashem put us in this world la'ovda u'lishomra, to do our hishtadlut. And we, as junior partners, right, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make a difference. Avraham is such an individual who acts and goes and does. Am Yisrael, Moshe, that is our tafkid. When they come back to Eretz Yisrael, no one wants to take them in. And even Boaz, who is a family relative, who knows the entire story of what happened to Naomi and to Ruth, does not take them in. Yes, he gives them tzedakah. Yes, they collect in the field. But shouldn't he have taken them in? Abraham takes in strangers into his house. Shouldn't leaders be machnes orchim, especially if it's your own kin? Was a close relative to Boaz, and Boaz was the most important person in the community. If he took them in, that would send a message to all. But Boaz is hesitant. And we know he knows who Ruth is, because when they meet, look at source number two in Ruth Perek Bet. He says, I know whatever you did to your mother-in-law. I know whatever you did, that you left Moab and you came to join Am Yisrael. So he knows her chesed personally, and he knows her religious direct. He knows this. It's not like, oh, they came and Boaz is clueless. Boaz knows. So yes, he says, you'll follow the people who are collecting in the field. But he doesn't say, come to my house for a meal. Now you could say, oh, this is a beautiful idea of chesed. Usually when we want to give tzedakah, we help the people to fish, right? We want to give them money so they can establish themselves. But this was an unusual situation. Here is Naomi bereft coming with Ruth. They have nothing. They are relatives, even strangers we bring into the house. That was his obligation. And look what he answers as well. Yishalem Hashem po'alech. Hashem should pay you back. Utehi maskuratech shleima mi'im Hashem Elokei Yisrael asher bat lachasot tachat. Hashem should pay you back because you came under Hashem's wings. Again, Boaz is not taking responsibility. Yehuda does not take responsibility. And here again, Boaz does not take responsibility. And Ruth is trying to convince him nicely. She says, I don't want to be like one of your maidservants. And yet, Boaz does not take the message. Months go by. Finally, Naomi, by seeing Ruth taking responsibility, Naomi finally wakes up and sees, yes, I have to do something for the future of Ruth. And what Ruth says, I'm going to give you Manoach, we're on source number three, Perigimel, Manoach Asher Yitav Lach. I care about you, not just because you're bringing me food, but I want to do something that's good for you. And Naomi now is awakened, and she has this idea. And what is her idea? Her idea is, yes, a plan. And what's the plan? Very similar to Ruth. Ruth said originally, I'm going to go into Boaz's field, meaning I'm going to go and find favor in his eyes. But Naomi says, you've been trying to do it too subtly. We have to do it in a strong, clear message. And she's the one who tells Ruth to go into the Goren in the middle of the night and to confront Boaz, similar to Tamar, who really in a way confronts Yehuda. So too, Ruth goes into the Goren to confront Boaz. And what does Boaz ask her? Miat. And she answers, Anochi Ruth amatecha, ufarasta knafecha al amatecha ki goelata. You have to redeem me because you are the Goel, the Redeemer. You have this great potential. You should fulfill it. If you redeem me, you're showing all of Am Yisrael that you're a leader, that you care, that you are really continuing this idea of Shevet Yehuda. And Boaz checks, there's a closer Goel. That individual does not want to take responsibility. And we see that Boaz takes responsibility, marries her. And the Tanakh itself connects to Tamar. Look at number four, Pasuk Yud Bet in Perek Dalet. Number one, she's like Rachel and Leah because she's connecting with Am Yisrael in this way. Number two, they're building a house like Beit Peretz, Asher Yalda Tamar LeYehuda. Megillat Rut itself is connecting the two ideas, that it is the women who really are the Nishei Chayil, who confront the individual, showing them, this is the greatness that you could be. This is your potential. Please fulfill your potential. But they do it each in their own way by confronting these individuals. And the Zohar explains, look at number five, that really these two women were so instrumental for the future of Shevet Yehuda. It was Ruth and Tamar. But we're going to see it, of course, goes further. We're going to see how Michal, but mostly Abigail and Bathsheba, are also going to be the three women in David's life. So again, we have Tamar in Yehuda. we have Naomi and Ruth, mainly Ruth, who convince and really direct Boaz. And we all know that Boaz and Ruth together are really the ancestors of David. So this is a straight line. In Ruth, we see all of the things connected. Back Yehuda and Peretz, and the end is the identity, right, of David HaMelech, that is the lineage. So now let's go to see in David HaMelech. What is happening with David HaMelech, the third of the great individuals from Shevet Yehuda? And here we have three women in his life, and each one plays a very different role. When David is anointed as king, we have this fascinating description of David, and it says he's Admoni, Im yafei inayim v'tov ro'i. And there's a beautiful midrash that really hits the nail on the head for the entire theme. And those who are in my Shmuel class know this very well. We have this idea of Admoni im yafei inayim. When you hear Admoni right away, what do you identify that with? And we know Tanakh is full of these references back and forth. Esav. So when we're describing David right away, our first reference is Admoni im yafei inayim v'tov ro'i. We have an Esav reference, but he's also Yafei Naim V'Tov Ro'i. Either that means good-looking, or it also means insightful, Tov Ro'i. So what's fascinating here is the Midrash mentions, and I have the two Midrashim for you, the Midrash, which mentions the Gemara, and also we have the view of the Malbim, was worried right away when he saw David, and that's why he doesn't think right away to anoint him. He is worried that David also has an Esav aspect to him, murder, bloodlust. And he's worried about David, because even though he sees he's Yafei Naim, and he's insightful, and he's smart, and he's quick on his feet, he also has that other aspect. And Shmuel's worried. And Hashem responds to him that you have to get up and anoint him, which means it wasn't that, oh, Shmuel realizes right away and does it on his own. Hashem has to tell him, this is the one to anoint. So what we're going to see throughout all of David's life is we have this battle between this Admoni and this Yafei Naim idea. Hashem tells Shmuel he's always going to pick the right thing to do, so that's why we can anoint him as king. But yes, he does have this duality in his personality. The first time we see David after he is brought to the house of Shaul is his confrontation with Goliath. And what's most important to us with Goliath is that he gives amazing speeches. He speaks, and he kills Goliath with a slingshot and a stone, not with a sword. So this original fear of David, right away, the first time we find David in this public arena is as someone who is eloquent, as speaks Dvar Hashem, as someone who's going to kill the enemy with a slingshot, because as he says, Hashem is the one who does the milchamot, and I am only his messenger. Again, this great interaction between Hashem and man being the junior partner. And especially for David, who's going to be such a great warrior, he has to set the precedent that God is fighting the wars and that he is an instrument of God. And what's fascinating in the end, it says, V'cherev ein biyad David. It told us he was using the slingshot, but it wants to emphasize this idea that he is not a warrior with a sword, even though he's a great warrior with a sword. But his main job is to be a representative of God fighting his battles. Who recognizes this greatness in David? It is Yonatan. Yonatan right away realizes that David is unique, and that's why he gives him all his clothing and his sword, because he realizes that he's going to wield the sword in the right way. Who should have really killed Goliath? It should have been Yonatan. But Yonatan understands this greatness in David. And we'll see throughout their whole relationship that he encourages David to be the best individual that he can be. Who else loves David? It's also Michal. Who should David have married as a result of killing Goliath? The prize was the daughter of the king, and what we expect would be the oldest daughter. But Merav had her eyes elsewhere, and already Shaul gave her to someone else. But Michal loves David. And what's fascinating about David is that everybody loves David. If you look at the Psukim, when Shaul meets David, it says he loves him. When Yonatan meets David, it says he loves him. When Bnei Israel meet David, it says they love him. When Michal David, it says that she loves him. When the women hear about David fighting the battles, all of them come out, sing and dance and praise Shaul. He killed thousands, but David kills tens of thousands. David is really a great symbol for all of Israel. And Michal is taken with David. But what is Shaul's reaction? Shaul is incessantly jealous of David, because he sees that David is kingly material. And he thinks if he marries Michal to David, she's going to be an obstacle, either by the fact that he is going to ask for a dowry of 100 orlot plishtim, of 100 slain plishtim, or because all the different battles, or she's going to collude with him. When Shaul is not able to kill David himself, he has a plan. He surrounds David's house at night. Now remember, David and Michal are now married. And Shaul surrounds the house and knows that in the morning when David goes out, he is going to kill David. Look at number 16. Source Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yutet. When Shaul is not able to kill David, he tries a few times with his spear. David escapes home. And when he comes home, soldiers surround the house. And look what it says. Look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vataged le David Michal Ishto. It's an unusual phrasing in the Tanakh. Vataged le David Michal Ishto. But assignations, epithets in Tanakh are very important. Are you the son of? Are you the wife of? Are you the father of? When it's really extra to tell us this information. So I'll tell it, and identified here as his wife. Shaul want his daughter to always be someone who is going to attack David for him, to be a proxy for him. And yet what do we see here? That Michal really loves David. So Michal, as wife of David, saves him. And she brings him down, a reference to Rahav. And we'll see later on another reference. And David escapes. And when the messengers come up, they see that she put trafim. Also, you have this kind of subterfuge where we had with Rachel and her father, Lavan. They find the trafim, but they don't find David. And then Shaul asks her, how did you do this? So Michal says to Shaul, it doesn't say Michal Eshet David here. And it also doesn't say Michal Bat Shaul here. But just Michal tells Shaul. So we're wondering, is she wavering? Does she feel bad? Let David go? Or is she acting neutral in front of her father? And she tells her father, Marilani Lama Amitecha. He told me, send me, because why should I kill you? Which means Michal is telling father Shaul that David threatened her, and that's why she let him free. Which means we see Michal is caught in these loyalties. Loyalty, or is she loyal to her father Shaul? What we do see plainly here, and this is answer number one, is that Michal is David's life. She doesn't do any act that is heroic in a emotional or beyond way, or does she? For her to stand up to her father and to save David, when she knows her father is an enemy of David, she takes a stand. But does she, afterwards, when she's speaking to her father, but we have to give her credit. She did stand up and she saved David. But look what happens further on. And now we're running all the way ahead to Shmuel Bet. In Shmuel Bet, when David is bringing Aron Brit Hashem to Yerushalayim, really celebrating with everybody, even the simple people. And what is David's response? Now you have to understand, if you look at the Psukim, you'll see that when David becomes a very important king, at least for Malchut Yehuda, before he becomes Melech on all of Israel, in order to have this relationship with Avner and Ishboshet and Shaul's son, he says, I need Michal back. What happens in between? In between, and we're going to see it in the end of the Avigail story, Michal is given to someone else by her father, Shaul. So somewhere along this line, throughout these years, we see that Michal now separates from David and goes back home. And only after David demands that she come back as his wife, she jumps down the window to save his life. And now again, she's at the window looking out at David dancing with everyone. And what is her response? Look at source number 20. V'haya Aron Hashem ba ba'ir u'michal Shaul nishkefa ba'ad ha'chalon. When Michal had to come back to David and she came against her will because pulls her back and she's looking through the window now. Remember, she saved David through the window. When she's looking through the window now, she's Bat Shaul. And when David comes back, what does she say? Vatives lo beliba. She looks down on him in her heart. Like that looks down on David. So from someone who loved David, who saves him, now we see she's in a totally different place. She comes out to David. Vateitza Michal, Bat Shaul. Get Bat Shaul. And what does she say to David? Huh. Look at you today. You're dancing and singing with the Lord. It says, you know, Lifnei Hashem. Hashem chose me more than you. We conflict. In the beginning, Michal identifies with David. She's his wife. She doesn't go along with her father to kill David. But as time goes on, she really reverts back to being cool. She thinks by criticizing David now, David will say, you're right. I really should be like Shaul. She really wanted to mold him, even though originally she was attracted to him because he was different. Now she wants to mold him back into her father's image. And David realizes, what makes me unique is that I'm not Shaul, and that chose me. So here we have a woman, Michal, who in the beginning does save David's life physically, but she's not on the wavelength, David. She doesn't really understand as time goes on what makes David special, and she doesn't feel part of his destiny at all. So yeah, Michal saves David's life physically, but she's not the heroine in David's life because she doesn't identify with him. She's responding cynically, and he sees through the cynicism that he is not like her father and never wants to be. As time goes on, and because of Shaul, David is really under pressure. Go back, I'll understand. We're going back now to Shmuel Aleph, and now we're going back to the early years before King, and he pressured because Shaul is hounding him. Shaul knows that he's going to be king. There's always David. He can't be with him because he's also loyal to his father and loyal to David. He's able to balance it way better than Michal was. David has to hide. He's with 400 men and he doesn't have provisions. He is watching the individual called Naval. Possessions of Naval, he has a plan. And he says, look, I'm one of Naval. No, he didn't ask me to. When the time comes, I'm going to ask him for food, provisions for my men. Because when David sends messengers to Naval, Naval says, no way, I am not going to share my provisions with you. Many people are running away. If you look at, we're running ahead now for you to see. Many people are running away from their masters, and I'm not going to support you. And if you look carefully in 23 and 23a, we see something very interesting. We see that in Divrei Hayamim, when you see the whole lineage, Naval is also some be king. And as Rashi says in Divrei Hayamim, Miuchas L'Rashi, those who took my class know what that means, pseudo Rashi, Miuchas L'Rashi, in Divrei Hayamim, that who was Naval potential for king? He was from a family that also have the background to be king. And what did Naval think? David's asking me, who is David? It wasn't really clear if David was anointed. We don't know for sure if everybody knew. I could be king. I come from a good family. He has Rut HaMoaviah in his background. That's a damper on his yichus. So he's really going to be king. And look at his name, Naval. A lowlife. And the wife is, and look at sources number 24 and 24a. Her name is Abigail, and they talk about her as Tovat Sechel. And what does Tovat Sechel mean? And Radak explains several things. She has Sechel, she has Chochmah, she knows a lot, Chakimat Mada, as Targum Yonatan says, and also she has Iyun and Havana, insight and understanding. So here is Naval, an individual who is very selfish but can be potential king, has this amazing wife, Abigail, so he so I could be king. So when David confronts him, he's not going to, he is a renegade and is going to rebel and is rebelling against Shaul. And we know Shaul is running after him. Naval swears, and we're in source number 22. David swears that he is going to kill males in Abigail and Naval's family because Naval disrespected him. Now, Naval and all the males in his family. And David comes with 400 men. What is the matter? Esav. Esav was coming with 400 men when he confronts Yaakov. And here we see again, David wants to kill. This is a personal vendetta. This is not Milchamot Hashem. This is not that same David that we saw at Goliath's confrontation, where with slingshot, only doing God's bidding. Fighting God's wars. Oh, he is going to kill Naval and all the males as a personal vendetta. Look what's happening to David. David is descending into the abyss. We have Yehuda descending into the abyss. Vayered Yehuda me'etechav. We had Boaz who doesn't take them in and doesn't step up. And we see that David is descending. He's becoming more Esav than Yefe'inayim, than Hakol Kol Yaakov, which he spoke so eloquently with Goliath. Now he's just holding a sword with his friend, decided that Naval deserves the death penalty as a personal vendetta. What is someone to do? And here again, we see the women in Shevet Yehuda stepping. Abigail realized the household is going to be wiped out. And she steps up and she takes responsibility and she's the one who's proactive. She gets together food, bride, David. And remember, David already swore before all his men that he wants to kill Baal's house. But Abigail confronts David. And what does she say? She gives him long, and this is what makes Abigail unique. We saw Michal gave a speech, but it was cynical, and she on everything David is doing. Abigail gives a long speech, but her speech, if you look carefully at all the psukim, we're on source number 22, we're in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Kafei. She comes quickly, and she gives this huge speech. All the words that she says, she is reminding David of who he is and why he was anointed and his special talents. And the language is so beautiful. Malbim, for you too, on number 24A, Malbim shows that for each sentence, she's reminding David the moment in his life. She's telling him, think of yourself, go back. But she's not out at him and being too obvious about it, but she's giving him this eloquent speech for David to think and to pull himself back step by step. Yes, that's who I am. Yes, I'm this special person. Yes, that's why I was chosen as king. So what does she say? Number one, Shema, listen to me. And she says, look, I brought you all these presents. But you usually fight, and I'm in Pasuk Kaf Zayin and Kaf Chet. Usually fight Milchamot Hashem. This is a personal vendetta. This is not what you're made to do. This is why you... Someone's coming and running after you, Pasuk Kaf Tet. Hashem has always saved you. Now you're going to kill your enemy? And remember, David had Shaul in a cave just a perek before, and David held himself back. Takes care of your enemies. Please don't do this. Also, Hashem took care of the sling. She reminded him of Goliath. Don't let this be an obstacle that you're killing, because that would be dam chinam. You would be spilling innocent blood. You can't spill innocent blood. Who are the ones who spill innocent blood? Right? We're criticizing Shaul that's running after you. So she reminds him step by step of who he is. And David understands this totally. Because finally, what does David say? Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael, asher shlachech hayom azeh likrati. You were sent by Hashem. This is a divine intervention. Ubaruch tamech ubruchat, you are blessed. Just like Boaz told Ruth, you are a bracha. You are a bracha. So a total realization of what God kami meni, because I didn't give her to Shayla, understanding his responsibility. So the women bring full understanding and responsibility, and David understands fully. And what's special about is he is a Nevi'ah. Batsheva's not a Nevi'ah. None of these other women are Nevi'ot, but Abigail is a Nevi'ah. And for us, for Atid Lavo, because she was able to help David find who he was and to have the melucha. Because if not, David would not be king. Look at the beautiful midrash. Go to 20. What is the midrash? The midrash Tehillim on the perek that identifies the mizmor for Naval / and Abigail in this event. The midrash says that no korban would help David do tshuva if he did kill Naval and all the males of his family. He would not be king. What Abigail was able to do, this intervention, not only stopping David from acting in this way, but for him to realize who he is. What is great about king? So she really brings Malchut David into fruition. Without her, even though he was anointed, he's not found yet. That's the beautiful Gemara. That's the next Gemara that I sent, that I have for you, number 26 and number 26a. She saves his melucha because he thinks I'm anointed, I'm king. And she says, you weren't crowned yet. So you can't judge people like Morid B'Malchut and kill Naval and say that's my kingly responsibility and right. That's not, you're not king yet. You can't do something like this. And what happens is that David understands. And he thinks, I could also do Dinei Nefashot Balayla. I could judge this kind of judgment at night. And she says, we don't judge at night. And a very interesting midrash, she asks him a halacha of Nida, which you can't also adjudicate at night, because you have to see the Bedika aid during the day with sunlight. Which means Abigail is smart. She confronts David. He's listening to her. And that helps him understand and change his mind and change direction. But only because of her intervention, able to be king. But what's fascinating, look at source number 26b. She does have a son with David, but he does not become anything special, and he is not David's continuity. So Avigail's job was to save David's kingship. Michal, to save his life. Abigail, save his kingship. Without Abigail, there would be no Malchut Beit David, because she helps David realize his to be king and not to fall in the trap of Shaul and not to become someone that he shouldn't be. That's special about Abigail. And her nevuah is so important to us, because many times we lose our way. Many times we get angry, or we get discouraged, or we get disappointed, or we get depressed, and we lose our way, and we have so much potential. What Abigail was able to do with David was to bring him back to his great potential. And that's why she's a Nevi'ah, and a Nevuah is written to, because important message to us. There would be no David without Abigail, no David HaMelech without Abigail. Is us. And we're finishing with Bathsheba. Now, the beginning with Bathsheba was very, very messy. A very black eye on David. And really, David was in the wrong place. We're in source number 27. David should have been fighting. Or do I have it as 28 for you? David should have been fighting when all the kings went out to war, but he wasn't. He was losing himself. And again, look back at the famous Midrash. What else was Abigail and Nevi'ah about David's future? That she tells him, if you look carefully at the Gemara says, I'm on 26a, not only would you never be able to be king if you killed Nabal, to judge, and you wouldn't be able to be king, and no one would trust your values. Also, the Gemara explains that she also had a nevuah of what's going to happen with Bathsheba. And she's telling David, be careful in the future as well. Be there to warn you, but I'm teaching you this lesson of introspection. But David doesn't take it. He's again slipping as king. He's not in the battle where he should be at this moment. Le'et tseitam lachim. He should have been fighting the battles. And we all know he calls in Bathsheba. And not only does he call in Bathsheba, he makes sure that Uriti, her husband, is going to be killed in battle. And Natan confronts him with a parable about sheep. Taking sheep that don't belong to you. And David says, oh, that person's a stealer. He's a murderer, right? He should be punished in the most severe way. And Natan says, you're the person. And right away, David realizes, and he says, Chatati. He admits to this terrible sin that he did. But even though David doesn't get death penalty, he is hounded by this terrible suffering that is going to happen throughout his life now as a punishment for what he did with Bathsheba. And also, whenever we talk about David, even though he's such a great melech, we always mention also the issue with Bathsheba. What happens here? And we see very importantly that after Natan HaNavi comes, and even after David admits, David leads a very difficult life and is terribly punished. And only in the end is he able to finally get back to Yerushalayim and barely get his malchut together. And when he does, there are rebellions and there's a terrible plague because he counts Bnei Israel. And David never gets back to his ultimate position. And David is feeble and he's old. And right now we are in Malachim, Aleph Perek Aleph, source number 30 and 31. And David is old. His melucha is going to be taken over by a son, Adoniyahu, who David doesn't approve of. But David's not involved taking a role in who should be king. He's just letting it happen. Who stays? To help him understand and decide, sure has to see Bathsheba's role. But now she steps up. Natan and Bathsheba are a team. And they come to David. Natan says, you have to speak to David. And Bathsheba speaks to David and she says, you know, you promised. You said that Shlomo is going to rule and that he's going to be the future. You have to get up and announce that he's going to be king. Don't let things just pass you by. Very David's life. When he's old and he's given up, Natan, but especially Bathsheba, confronts. And it's Bathsheba who awakens David, even though he's old, and even though he doesn't want to step in and take a role, it tells must. You promised, and you have to fulfill your promise. This goes all the way back to our Yehuda does not fulfill his promise. He should have given Tamar to Shelah, but he doesn't. Here, Batsheva's reminding, you promised that you're going to give the melucha to Shlomo? Now fulfill your promise. And when Natan goes to speak to him as well, David will not say that I'm going to give the melucha to Shlomo without having Batsheva in the room. And what we find here is that Batsheva says, Yechi Adoni HaMelech David LaOlam. After David promises her, she then says, David will live forever. And she doesn't only mean David, but his melucha will live forever. So what Batsheva did for David was she was the future. About Shlomo, about all the different kings, about Melech HaMashiach. Because Batsheva was about the future of sure that his future would be secure with the right person. And she confronts him. And then not only does he ensure Shlomo's anointed, he gives him a whole speech of following, of making sure that there's going to be continuity. She awakens David to take his responsibility. And that is what is so wonderful about him in Am Yisrael and these Nashim of Shevet Yehuda. We see Tamar with Naomi and Ruth with Boaz. And we see Michal with David, but I wouldn't count her as heroine, David's life, because she vacillates. She's not really so loyal and she has a different vision. But she does live his life and she deserves credit for that. The two who I think are in competition are Avigail. Heroines in very different ways. Avigail right away saves David, saves his reputation, and makes sure he's not going to make a mistake. He wants to, but she stops him from making that mistake that will destroy him. Never be a melech. She saves him in the here and now, but spiritually, making sure that he'll fulfill completely his personal destiny. But her son doesn't become king, and we don't hear about Avigail later on. Beva almost destroys David's melucha. He's taking her and killing her husband, or making sure he's in the battlefield, very dangerous place, almost totally destroys David's melucha. And yet, it is through her that there's going to be continuity. Just like we mentioned earlier, Ruth could almost be the destruction of David. We always find the discussions in the Midrash, why did everyone think David can't be king? Because he had Ruth HaMoavia in his background. So in all these situations, Tamar, the kiss of death, Yehuda's two sons die who are married to her. We have these terrible destructions and possible total, right, implosions in all these great women's lives, the individual. And yet Batsheva secures David's future. And the only one who we have a haftorah about is Batsheva. She's the one who makes sure that there's going to be a future for David. And she receives real credit for the future of David. So I would say that the two main heroines in David's life, just like we gave two, Naomi and Ruth, for Boaz, are really, on the one hand, Avigail, because she helps him understand who he is. And on the other hand, Batsheva, who, even though we don't see her impact his actual melucha, will save him for the future. And I think it's very important for us. There are always moments in our lives where when we listen to others or where we understand things or when we make mistakes and we're able to really reflect about things, these are moments in our life that could really change destiny completely. And what we see with Malchut Yehuda is that these women played such an important role in these individuals' lives. And this idea of thinking, introspection, of making sure that we understand what our potentials are and really making steps towards that, but even realizing that many times if we have failures along the way, that we could always pick ourselves up and continue on. And that's what most of these Nashim really represent. This idea of perseverance, this idea of tikkun, of redemption, of being able to continue and making sure that there'll be a future. So we many times have to care about the now. We have to fulfill our destinies personally. And we also have to think about the future. And that's what these women really represent to us. and to Malchut David. Thank you very much. It was really great to see everybody.
Thank you so much, Professor Rosenzweig. That was incredible. If anyone did not receive the Makoro Shira